This is Tom Luongo.
This is Alex Craner.
This is Franco Terrazano.
I'm Dr. Peter McCullough.
This is Joshua Allen, the Cowboy Preacher, and you're listening to the Sean Newman Podcast.
Welcome to the podcast, folks. Stop what you're doing, okay? You're going to want to hear this. As it sits right now, there is one ticket left to the SMP Presents Cornerstone Forum, okay? I'm going to get into that, but if you want to be the last person who gets entrance into this sucker, maybe pause it. Maybe go click on that thing. I was at 17, like, not that long ago, like 24 hours ago, and just like that, it's all gone. So, maybe don't listen to this anymore. Just pause it. Way you go. And then you can pick up. Okay, I'm going to assume that we're sold out now, and that's super cool. So if you were hoping to get to the SMP Presents Cornerstone Forum, I assume it's sold out now. There's one ticket left, and if not, by all means, get on there, and away you go. Either way, there is other ways you can get involved. We'll get into that in a second. Before we get there, though, how about we start here, Silver Gold Bull. Of course, they're my favorite precious metals dealer right here in Alberta, offering a full suite of services to help you buy, sell, and store precious metals. They ship right to your metal, ship your metal discreetly, fully insured, and with tracking straight to you. If you've not tried it, I highly suggest you do. I texted Graham, which is super nice, you know, just ding, there, text him. And I said, what's the text line saying? He said, the text line guy would say that gold is at an all-time high and silver is starting to move as well. No one can time the market or know when it's at its peak or a new floor. So we recommend taking a daily cost averaging approach, smaller purchases at regular interviews. They still have the offer on the silver maples and the 10-ounce spot bar, one per customer. And they also have some deals on 1-ounce gold. There you go. You can text him in the show notes is the text line. Text Graham, say, hey, happy Thursday or whatever. I suggest saying, hey, thanks for, you know, Silver Gold Bull supporting the Sean Newman Podcast. I would appreciate that. I think that would be much appreciated. We got to, you know, they've come along for the ride here in 2024. I've been enjoying it. I think a lot of you have been enjoying it. And I hope they hear back from you as well. Super simple. Just shoot them a text. McGowan Professional Chartered Accountants, Kristen and team. They've been dealing with this Yahoo, and I've been enjoying that as well. They've been lovely, honestly. They offer accounting, bookkeeping, business consulting and training, financial planning, and tax planning. They've been looking to hire a CPA here in Lloydminster, somebody from the community if possible. If abroad, that's great too. Quickly, they believe in the SMP, supporting free speech and starting conversations. If that's somebody like yourself, maybe McGowan CPA would be a fit. Go to McGowanCPA.ca, and we hope to, you can always text me if you're interested and can't figure it out or can't find Kristen and team. Either way, they're looking to hire. Back to the SMP Cornerstone. Wild, you know, a couple weeks out, and we've had a strange turn of events. We had Mikkel Thorup not coming because, you know, they just had their third kid. So Dave Bradley added. Now Mikkel Thorup is coming. So we've got a full slate now. We've added in Dave Bradley. We've got Mikkel Thorup back on the table. And it's going to be a full day. And I'm assuming if that hasn't perked your ears up, something else has. And there's only one ticket gone probably. So it's a sold-out show. Can I say that safely by now? I assume I can. And I go, well, there's other ways you can get involved. And here's how. Sunday morning, 9 a.m. at the Moose Lodge, we're doing SMP Presents Sunday service. It kind of feels a little bit too corporate for me. I don't know why I don't love it. But either way, the idea is there. We've got the Cowboy Preacher, Tanner Nadei. You both you know and love. Cam Milliken has never graced the airwaves of this, but he has opened with grace at one of my events. He is a pastor from Vancouver once upon a time. So the three of them are going to be on stage. They're going to get 15 minutes each to give a little keynote speech, if you would, on, you know, Cornerstone, Bible, Jesus, any way they want to twist and construct that. We're going to have a little bit of a round table followed by, you know, with Q&A attached to it. We're not going to go too crazy long. For the kids, this is family friendly. I realize they're not going to want to listen to a group of people talk. That's why Shine Christian Academy is going to be there. They're going to have downstairs some activities for the kids. So that is free to attend. Of course, we're going to take donations. No, I'm not getting rich off this. Your money is going to go to, well, we got to figure that out. I don't want to lie to you. I actually haven't, I just know whatever money we raise, we're going to donate somewhere. And going to try and keep it here in Lloydminster in the community. But donations, welcome. But we're not trying to make money off this. This is free to all you. Bring the family. It's a family affair. And we'd love to see you Sunday morning, 9 a.m. Okay, that's what I got for you. Yes. How about now we get onto that tale of the tape? He just released his debut country sonata, Skies We Knew Back Home. He's living in Austin, Texas. I'm talking about Daniel Roy. So buckle up. Here we go. Welcome to the Sean Newman Podcast. Today I'm joined by Daniel Roy. So first off, sir, thanks for hopping on.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure.
I was just recounting to you how in my world, these things kind of, you know, like David wouldn't know this because I didn't tell him, but I was searching for a guest last night. I still didn't have a guest. And I'm like, normally I got like 10 guests and I'm like, I got to stop talking to people. But every once in a while I get in this rhythm of where you go too hard and then you slow up. And then you're like, you know, if you've ever maybe surfed on the back of like a wakeboard or a wakeboat, sorry, you know, when you hit the top, you're like, oh crap, I got to get going again. That's the moment I'm like, I'm almost ready to fall off. And I start to push down. And I was writing out names of like people that I'm like, I should probably reach out to this person to have him back on. David Parker being the one. And I looked down at my phone and he goes, hey, you want a guest on your podcast? I'm like, actually, yes. You want to come on? He's like, no, you got to interview Daniel Roy. Okay, fair enough, Daniel. Let's hear a bit about your story. Whereabouts you at? And I don't know, tell us about yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, it's a pleasure to be on. I grew up like playing music my whole life. My mom was a church piano player and stuff like that, and always kind of grew up with a love for it. And I went to music college for music, so I like studied like the theoretical aspect of things, you know, and studied jazz, studied classical, and all that. And I found that like there was a sometimes that stuff can get too academic, you know, and so I was always into kind of like the as you put it, like the gospel aspect of music, where there's, and when I say gospel, I just mean like the soul that's infused into the music, you know, where it's like it's about the emotional content that you're communicating more than the notes themselves, you know. So that's my kind of like approach to.
So you're not Taylor Swift?
I'm not a Taylor Swift hater. I take her songs, some of them, you know. But I would say that like I see myself somewhat as like a songwriter, of course, but like a composer, you know. Like I really take pride in like crafting tracks, you know what I mean. I think throughout a lot of the project here, there's a lot of like really just cool moments where there's a lot of just like, in my opinion, kind of like cool, like musical transitions and stuff like that, where you kind of enter a new landscape and stuff, and being like really intentional in trying to craft that stuff. That was kind of like the musical philosophy to this current release. And then just the conceptual philosophy, I guess, was centered around, well, the first song, Lord of East Garafraxa, it's about, it's loosely about my grandpa, but it's about anybody who kind of, it's about overcoming adversity and the concept of, working yourself to the bone in order to achieve like freedom, independence, like to chart your own course in life, you know? And then the second one, Sacred Things, that's a song, that's a song on this project that's about like relationships dying. And it's like there's a line in there that goes, I've been reckless and vulgar with sacred things. And so it's just about like taking ownership for like the passage of time and how that you're responsible for that. And and then People Where I'm From is just about like kind of people back home and stuff like that. But yeah, I put this together. I was born and raised in Dunnville, Ontario, and lived in Ontario my whole life up until a couple of years ago, and I relocated to Austin, Texas, which has been a cool transition.
Why did you leave Ontario?
You know what? I never thought that I would, honestly. Like, I was proud to be Canadian. I was proud of where I came from. And then it honestly just got to a point throughout COVID where I was just like, I can't put up with people kind of, treading on my toes anymore, bro. You know, it's like, I'm a big, like, I'm freedom oriented, you know, in Lord of East Garafrax, the first song on this project, there's a line that goes, a voodoo gypsy child with dusty blistered feet. I follow freedom and a free man's what I'll be. And, I really believe that, you know, I put my money where my mouth was. And, I just decided that, you know, I didn't want to live in a society, honestly, that like forced people, like, people's behaviors, you know, force their medical choices and stuff like that. And that's a whole other tangent. I just highly value that. So I just decided a couple of years ago to pick up and move to Austin. And it's been a great transition. I love Texas. I've definitely regained a lot of appreciation for like home too, which is kind of really what like the emotional content of this project it's dropped on YouTube. It's coming up in Spotify in a day or two, but by the time this drops, it might already be out. But it's really about reflecting on home and having gone far away from things that you know and unfamiliar territory, and reflecting on how much you value the, like, your roots, essessentially, you know. And I thought that I actually didn't even go into it intending for it to be a super, like, not as kind of quote unquote country as it turned out, but just through like a matter of course, it just all the decisions just seemed to kind of like reflect that properly, where it was like, you know, because the songs are so much about home and roots and that kind of thing, right? And, you know, literally being in the country where I grew up, and so a lot of the flavors kind of reflect that.
You know, when you talk about you know, I forgive me, I don't know how you put it, but I'll try and rephrase it. It basically, you know, like, you're really enjoying Texas, but you also have a new appreciation for home. What do you mean by that? Like, I'm always curious because, you know, like, there was a poll that came out, and I've been talking a little bit about this, but Eva Chipiak, tons of time for that lady and what she's done here in Canada. She put out a poll saying, you know, if you could leave today and go somewhere else in the world, would you? And I was shocked by the Twitter poll. It was 80% said yes. I said, not a chance. I clicked no. Then I made a video about it because I'm like, I'm not going. And whenever I talk to somebody, it's not that I know lots of people that have gone south, and I wish them all the best. And I hope they continue to talk about what's going on in Canada and shed a light on it and continue to do their utmost. You know, I think of Drew Weatherhead in particular. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Drew, because he's been one of those guys who's gone down to the States for 6 months at a time and then come back. And there's a lot of reasons for that. And I don't hold that against him one iota. But when you say, you know, like, there's a new appreciation for home, what do you mean by that?
I think just, you know, you kind of, when, to some degree, as you kind of alluded to, you know, there's a lot of, you know, it, with like 80% is an astounding number to say that you would, you know, prefer to leave, right? And it's like, I never once growing up thought that that would be the case for me. You know, I loved Canada so much. It shaped me into who I am, which is like very different from, I do have like a dual citizenship, but I see myself as being like raised in like the Canada that I know, right? And then so for to have that like love for a place and the people that like you grew up with, and then for it to kind of become bitter, or a place that you don't recognize, you know, is very difficult, because like we're all predisposed with something internal within us that has like a craving for home to some degree, I think, you know. And for that to be, and I mean, also in the, just in a more general sense, in the generation that we live in, it's like things have changed so quickly, much more than at any time in the past. You know, it's like, you know, 100 years ago, it's like, oh, we got like a slightly better wheels for the plow this, you know, or for the, you know, for the cart this generation. And, you know, when you look at our generation, it's like, you kind of grew up like, you know, in the, in the 90s were kind of like an idyllic time. We didn't really know it, but it was like there was, you know, it felt like there was world peace, you know. And and then you go through like 9/11 and you realize like, oh, your earth is shattered, your world is shattered a little bit to some degree, you know. And then just like various like economic crashes and the internet taking off, and then like the transition to AI and stuff like that. Like I would say that our generation of any time in human history has been the one that has had to adapt to the most change, and where our childhoods are probably the most unrecognizable now than they would have been, you know, relative to another time in history. So it's but as far as you know, going back to your question, like realizing that like the place that you grew up did give you all these beautiful things, you know what I mean? And that's kind of I guess in a way a bit of a metaphor for just like relationships in general too, you know. It's like you don't conduct yourself perfectly with each person that you conduct yourself with every time, you know. And you have to there's a certain grace and like forgiveness there, and there's like a healing of that like hurt, I guess, that's kind of therapeutic, I think. And realizing that like, you know, even though you chose to like move to a different path in life or whatever, that you don't need to throw the baby out with the bathwater in your memory, and that there are a lot of like beautiful things that you can actually value, you know. Because I think like for me, there's like there's a lot of like resentment to some degree, you know. It's like there's like just like things shift so drastically, and it's like, you know, different philosophies emerge on like how people want to conduct their society and stuff. And I think you're in Alberta, correct? Yeah. So I think like things were fairly wild in Alberta too, of course, but in Southern Ontario, I would say that was like one of the worst places to live, like in the world for all that stuff, where, you know, it's just like, I had like literally like cops called on me because I didn't have my mask like put up to my nose properly or whatever, you know. And just a wild time. It's like, you know, I think it changed all of us, but I think it, you know, opened up a lot of eyes for, you know, how people conduct themselves kind of in a quote unquote crisis. But no, I mean, it's just beautiful to come back to a place and realize that, like, you know, there is like there's a home here, and there's a beauty here. And with my first song on the project, Lord of Euscarafraxa, it's about my grandpa who toiled the fields out in a farm just west of Toronto, but an hour west of Toronto, for like 50 years or 60 years or so. And just like that song to me, it represents a few things, but it represents like freedom, overcoming hardship, but also like a connectedness to the land. And I tried in that song to really like paint the sonic picture of, you know, there being kind of like landscapes and like dirt hills and stuff like that with the bass. And then that kind of like plays off of like a sun beating down. And those are the kind of like the sonic soundscapes that I'm trying to create with that song. But really just like a, you know, with that, it's kind of like an homage to home as well, right? Where it's like, that is land that like my ancestors like knew like the back of their hand. It's like another like a line from the song is, I've pushed this plow until my fingers start to bleed, like a wheat king withering out in the heat. And to me, that kind of represents, and I did like roofing for many years, and just the you know, it's a different world and a different experience with the earth when you're like out working outside for 12 hours a day, you know. And I tried to kind of like capture that sonically in the song. So I know that kind of got off on a tangent from where you were headed before, but
you know, with your background in music, you said you played piano at, forgive me, the church, correct?
Well, I did as well, but yeah, I also went to college for classical piano and played a wide range of repertoire from, you know, classics like Bach, Mozart, Beethoven, Chopin. I love Chopin, love Beethoven.
You love Chopin. What is it about Chopin?
I'm so glad you asked about Chopin. Oh, I'm that, yes. So Chopin, he was born in 1810, and he is unique among classical composers in that he very rarely wrote beyond just the piano, but he's so widely regarded because the piano is such a proliferated instrument, and because his work was so profound, that he's kind of regarded as like it as far as like classical piano. I mean, there's beautiful composers as well besides him, obviously, but the point being is that he hardly ever wrote for anything besides the piano. But what I love about him is he was one of the ones that truly, and actually there's a song on this record that was heavily, heavily inspired by a Chopin concerto, number two, number one in E minor. What he made me realize is that music is emotion. And I thought that it was so profound to realize that like the notes that you're playing when you play Chopin are only a sonic representation of emotion, you know? And that's what music is all about. You know, I think oftentimes, especially in the classical field, like people have such a tendency to like, you know, because it's technical and it's great music. And, you know, people have a tendency to in that world to be very technically motivated, you know, but really it's about like, and you hear it in Chopin, it's like there's like tragedy and like just like despair, you know. And he to me is one of the goats as far as like being able to communicate that level of like profound human emotion where you're like, you know,
man, you're going to make me go listen to some Chopin after this.
You should. I'll send you a whole list.
Here's my question to you. You know, it's funny that this seems perfect timing, if you would. Okay. Mm. I have an event happening here in Lloydminster on April 27th. And I'm like this close to pulling the trigger on a musical guest, if you would. Okay. And I went to Jordan Peterson and I found it fascinating. He had, and forgive me folks, and maybe you know the answer to this, I believe it was bass guitar, but once again, now I'm almost forgetting. But before he started, he had this classical guy playing riffing on a guitar. And I was like, wow, this is super cool. Like I really just enjoy the atmosphere it sets. And I'm all about the little details. The little details, yeah. When you put on a show, it make it good or great. It's totally. It's that much. So absolutely. I've been trying to figure out what I want to do. So, you know, I have a full day forum with different speakers. Then I have supper. And as supper ends, I'm like, I want to have a musical guest, but I don't want to have like, you know, your typical singer or something. I just want it to be background noise, but I want it to be cool background noise.
Right.
And I've been talking to a woman who plays the harp because I saw the harp when I was like in college.
Yes.
And it was the first time I'd ever seen it. Oh. I've never seen one since. And I walked in and I was so mesmerized at how they were just doing it. I'm like, what the heck is that?
It's
beautiful. She didn't sing a word. She just sat there and played. And I'm like, this is something transcendent.
Yeah.
So my question to you is, because I've been wrestling with, do I bring in like a jazz band? Do I find someone to play the piano? Because there's maybe no other instrument quite like the piano. I don't know why that is. You probably know.
Agreed.
And it's just beautiful.
Yeah.
Your thoughts on if you're gonna have something to, I don't know, set the mood sounds wrong, but maybe that is the right thing. After a full day conference that isn't like, I don't know, like do you get where I'm going?
Absolutely. So is this, are you intending it to be for like kind of like a concession hall, like kind of thing where like hundreds of people would be flocking through? Cause the one thing about a harp is like, it's not going to project quite as loud, but if it's kind of like kind of muted conversations or something like that, dude, get the harpist, bro. Absolutely.
What do you mean muted conversations?
Just like if, people are like, it's kind of like a hushed like environment, you know what I mean? Where like people are talking quietly, like, you know, over dinner or what have you, or something like that. It would be phenomenal, but it would be phenomenal music for an environment where you could hear it. You know what I mean? If you were to, if it would be like more noise as far as conversations, I'd probably go with like the jazz band just because like they're going to give like a vibe to things. They're going to have a drummer there. You know what I mean? They can kind of like pick up the rhythm of the conversation and there's a bit more drive to a jazz band, but a harpist.
Yeah.
They're going to paint the room with with beautiful sound. oh, dude, if you have the chance to hire a harpist and it makes sense, do that for sure.
Well, to me, I'm like, well, one would be at supper time where all everybody's eating. You could have that in the background playing. I've only done it once in my life, and I hate to give away ideas, but I only got one ticket left to the bloody conference or the forum anyways. So I'm like, well, at this point, the people that are coming here, sorry, surprise. I think that's where I'm going. I'm just trying to finalize the details. And I'm like, maybe my idea is wrong, but I go back to the first time you ever see, I can't think of another instrument. Maybe you're a man who studied music. So maybe you got one.
Yep.
But when I walked in the room and the harp was playing, I'm like, it stopped me in my tracks. I was like, that is something.
Yeah.
You don't see that every day. Is there another instrument out there like that?
So I'm also very glad that you brought this up. This is perfect. Yes, in my opinion, there is. And I absolutely am in awe of the beauty of a harp. But I would say that, so me and my friends, actually, while we were recording this project, we were having this conversation because we have a wider range of instruments on there. We've got piano, which I play, guitars, bass guitar. But then we also, I wanted to have a more expansive sonic palette. So we got violins on there too. The violinist was incredible. And then we also brought in a pedal steel player. So if you don't know about pedal steel, a pedal steel, like a pedal on a bike and steel. So it's like a guitar type thing. You may have seen them in kind of old country bands and stuff like that. They have kind of a really bendy kind of sound. The guy plays with an invisible ring on his finger just to slide. And there's pedals that kind of scoop the sound and stuff like that. The point is we brought in a pedal steel player for this project, and it was, like you said, transcendent. It's just stuff that it just sends you into a dream state almost, right? And what we were talking about with my friends, the harp, to some degree, the strings are tuned and all that, but there's a real liveliness to the sound of a harp, as opposed to if you're listening to something from a digital source, you would you'd be hearing a replication of the sound, right? And why a harp is so beautiful, you're getting multi-millions of extra vibrations from the harp in the room, which translates to your ear. And then with pedal steel, we're to get back to the conversation, we were putting. We're just talking about what makes the pedal steel so great. And it's common with pedal steel, violins, voice. They all are non-tuned instruments. So you have to find the note on a violin, and you can scoop between notes, and you can do the same on a pedal steel. And I think any instrument where you can do that really, and I think that's why electric guitar took off it did, but any instrument where you can kind of waver between notes when you want to is going to be up there for
if played, I don't know the word because that actually goes against what you're saying, but played with such skill to master that is something that can that's beautiful in music. I get exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
To hit certain things, and you're like, wow, that is something. I go back to anyone who saw Jordan Peterson in Edmonton. When the guy was up riffing.
Okay.
Jordan Peterson probably, man, was that last year already? Well, it was for sure last year. I actually don't know I think it was last summer. Took the wife to it and at Rogers Place, and the guy was playing, he was kind of... word that comes to mind is nerdy. It's not the right word, but you kind of
he was a craftsman, maybe.
Yeah, he was into it, almost dorky, but in the best possible way.
Right.
And he was jamming. It was super cool. And it really set the mood for the night. I was I like that.
Yeah.
The next show I have, although I can't have that guy, I want to start messing with that so that I can create some of that at the end. Not that I'll probably get it right on the first time, but at the same time, if you never try anything, how do you know what you do and don't like, right? So, a musical guy chiming in is really fascinating. Now, is this your first album? Get back to you and the album. I'll pull aside my ideas. Is this your first album? Is it your first try, or have you been doing this for some time?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I've had like a lifelong journey with music, and I've never stopped doing it. And I've done all kinds of like been in all kinds of bands and stuff like that. Some stuff that we did record and stuff like that. But I found that like it was actually, to be honest, like kind of I take responsibility as well for maybe not like being able to manage certain things or whatever. But I just found that I was, there was a lot of people that, I had kind of trouble getting to like commit to a project, you know what I mean? That like really wanted to do it. You know, for a lot of people, it's kind of like, yeah, we'll get together, we'll have a couple beers and, you know, we'll have some fun, you know? And then as soon as it becomes like do anything, like serious with it, or like it becomes like showtime or whatever, it's kind of like, oh, I don't really want to, you know? So I and you know, great people, nothing against them personally or whatever, but, yeah, I just found that there was like, just creatively, the people that were kind of around were in, tended to be in that vein, which, was, you know, led to a bunch of kind of like stops and starts on projects. So to answer your question, yeah, this is my first like release as Daniel Roy. And I've been involved in like all kinds of other projects and stuff like that in the past. But this is the first release as.
So how much fun has it been to be in Austin, Texas to release your first album instead of, you know, Southern Ontario?
Yeah, it's been great. I mean, the cool thing is that I've kind of got two local audiences of like people that I know here. You know, I've been in Austin for a couple years now. And so I have a bunch of friends here that were able to go, you know, stream it on YouTube and stuff like that. And then friends back home and stuff. So it's been cool as well, because, you know, like a lot of these songs are like the people that I know in Austin, right? They know me, but like they might not necessarily know like my home, you know what I mean? And that's what I kind of wanted to like lay out, you know, on this project, was like, was that feeling of home. So in that sense, it's been cool too, because like I've gotten to share it with a lot of people back home, and just like the things that I wrote about and the experiences that we had and stuff like that, like really resonated on a personal level with a bunch of them. And so that was kind of cool too, you know what I mean? To kind of like bridge that gap, and then, you know, give some of my friends here kind of an insight into, you know, where I grew up, not in a way that like, I really wanted to tell the story of like the feeling of home, you know, and, particularly feeling of home, like growing up in the country. And, yeah, I think anybody who like, you know, had that experience or enjoys like rural vibes, we'll appreciate kind of some of the stuff that's on there.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I'm right on this, cause I don't know music as well as you, or probably most folks. I do like to listen to it, but to me it feels, what did I say? Folky with a little, like, I don't know. Is it gospel? Is it, I don't know what the right word there is.
Yeah.
Well, like the start of your first song. And I'm glad you've said it six times and not me, cause I couldn't pronounce the one word. I'm like, how the heck did I say that?
Yeah.
You know, I think is a verse from the Bible. Correct. Correct me if I'm wrong. It's got a real interesting feel to it right at the start. You know, like, it's interesting. It's got an interesting feel to it, is what I'm trying to spit out. And, you know, like I go, I don't know. I'd be curious what the market in Ontario is for it, but I feel like if I saw you playing at a local establishment, it would have a really interesting feel seeing you up on stage. I'm assuming you've gotten to do that several times, or lots, or I like, isn't Austin got this giant scene?
Totally. Yeah, absolutely. Like I have stuff lined up right now, like every day of the week in Austin, literally. So I was kind of in album mode, kind of getting that kind of put together and stuff like that. And now I'm getting out and like getting great feedback. Honestly, it's I think the recording process is great, but I mean, really, there's nothing more gratifying than like playing songs like for people, like in front of people, you know what I mean? To a room, and like you can kind of like pick up on the energy that they give off, and then you're able to kind of go somewhere special, where it's like when you're in the studio, you kind of have to like tap into that energy, you know what I mean? Whereas like in a live performance aspect, it's it just comes completely naturally, because you know you're communicating to people,
because you're dealing with human beings right there. It's no different. It's no different than this conversation. It would be a thousand times better. I'm not knocking it. If you were sitting across the table from 100%. me, and we could, you could go back and forth, body language, everything. Music is a performing art, right? Like you want to have people in the audience to vibe with. Otherwise, you know, it's pretty hard to hit all the right notes and play the right tune when you're in this, you know, I don't know, padded walled cell.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, on that note as well, it was actually kind of an interesting process for me with this recording experience, because it's like, as I mentioned before, with kind of like my reverence for Chopin and stuff like that, I've always felt and known that like music needs to translate to like a visceral emotion, you know, like if it's just notes, don't even bother, you know, like you're not, you're wasting everybody's time. To your point about, you know, it being easier to like tap into an emotion when you're standing in front of like a live audience or when you're performing in front of a live audience. The recording process actually was like, it was almost a little bit, there's almost more emotion than I could handle. Cause, when I was coming up to Canada, I had this Australian Shepherd that was just like a beautiful dog. Like I got compliments on him everywhere I went. People would just be like, "Oh, dude, like I gotta let you know, like I love that dog." And he caught parvo, which is like a stomach.
Caught what?
It's called parvovirus.
Okay.
And I had only barely heard of it like a month before. But it's like apparently going around, and it's like super deadly for dogs. And like he passed away. He was like 7 months old when he died. And so I was like going through that through the whole like recording process. And so as far as like tapping into emotional content, I was like, I was able to go to some of those places, you know. But it was a wild experience. But
you know, I was going back to your media release. Mm-hmm. David had sent it to me, and one of the lines that caught me, here, I got to pull it up now. Decades of toiling, the ground and patching roofs has taught him to give careful attention to that which is easily taken for granted. I don't know. Although the small things, as we pointed out here multiple times, really matter. Working on roofs makes sense. Small things actually really matter, like really matter. Patching roads, you know, I assume the same thing. But how have you taken that into music? I found that interesting to be in a media release on your album. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but
awesome. Absolutely. I think it's it also ties into my whole philosophy with music too, where it's like, yeah, I think sometimes, especially these days, right, it's a lot of times, you know, it's just like, it just chords in a melody, right? But I have a philosophy that I live by when it comes to music creation. You know, there's the classic phrase, the devil's in the details. But I kind of like twisted that on its head a little bit. And my approach to like music creation, or really like any skill acquisition in life, is that God is in the details. And it's when you focus on that like minute, like the smallest detail in the painting, that the rest of it comes to life, you know. Because if you're like the parable in the Bible about the 100 sheep, and one wanders off, and the shepherd goes to find the lost sheep because he cares so much about that one, as opposed to, you know, the 99 who stayed or whatever. And it's like, if you care that much about the smallest things, it's going to add up to like a much larger whole in the aggregate. And same thing with roofing. I mean, I used to slave away on roofs for 12, 16 hours a day. And it's like, you know, even just in terms of like how you get better in terms of like your, you know, efficiency in terms of how you're moving and stuff like that. And, you know, you get stronger over time, and you figure out like just a quicker way to do things, and just like nailing patterns. It's like, oh, this, it works best if I'm kind of going like one skip, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you know? And it's like when you, I think like anytime that you're wanting to like achieve something great in life, I think it's easy. And I'm a dreamer too. Like I love, there's like, you know, there's, metaphors of dreams all over this project, you know, but I think I'm good at dreaming, you know. I can dream all day long. But what I need to keep focused on is like the details, and that comes over time and you know, persistence and stuff like that. I mean, for me, it took me a long time to learn that, you know. And I think that's why I wanted to phrase it that way in terms of drawing that comparison between, you know, the roofing to like how I approach things with music, right? Because it's like you're building a house in a sense, you're building a project, you know, and there's a lot of little decisions and things that go into like the creation of it, right? You know what I mean? And then in the installation of any roof, there's going to be, you know, 10,000-20,000 nails, you know, and then each one of those nails is super important in terms of like the overall structure of the house. So I kind of just like approached that, took that approach with music, and I tried to really honor the details in what I was doing.
You know, I, as you're talking, I'm like, I really like that, but I'm like, what did they mean by devil in the details? I think I already know, but I'm like, I should really check it. Yeah. And here's the devil is in the details is an idiom alluding to a catch or a mysterious element hidden in the details. So that's what devil in the details mean. And right. What you're alluding to is another way when you put it as God is in the details is the beauty is in the details if you look close enough. And when it comes to music, certainly the little things add up. You know, as a hockey guy, I remember this is such a formative experience. We were playing college hockey. We're a team that didn't have a ton of money. We weren't this wealthy team. And we had this bit of money raised, and we could spend it on anything the team needed. And I was a vocal voice, and I thought we needed a new practice jersey because I remember practice jerseys being junk or something. I'm just like, it just seemed the most pragmatic. Yeah. And somebody said we need a goal horn, and I started laughing. I was like, goal horn? We never score. Why the heck do we need a goal horn? And it's funny. We got the goal horn. I got over, you know, and the first time that went off, you could feel the entire atmosphere, the entire building change. And Wouldn't you know it, we started scoring a bit more. Yeah. And I sat there and I was like, that was a tiny little change in my opinion. Oh, and it amounted to such a huge change in the overall feel of the game of hockey in a building. And, you know, once again, I do my shows right now at the casino in Lloydminster. They got this beautiful 240 person hall with a great stage, and it's got great lighting, and it just, you can just feel it, right? Just a couple tweaks and you can just feel it. And people always laugh at me, or they don't anymore, I don't think, but the staff used to laugh at me because I have this, like, I'm pretty weird when it comes to shows. I don't know where this OCD, I think it's OCD, comes from, but like I get in there way too early. I spend way too much time in that place. I walk around on the stage. I feel how it sounds. I feel how the mic sounds. I turn things up. I turn things down. I turn lights off, on. Like, I just want to, I want to get it perfect, if there is such a thing. But to me, those little details add up to an experience that the audience has no idea about. Now they do, I guess. Right. But like, as an artist, you probably are like, oh yeah, I get that, right? Like when you're messing with a song and vibing with all these different instruments, you know, you can try out 17 different things, and then all of a sudden, bang, and you hit it, and you're like, that's it right there. That was the thing. And you got to love the process. If you don't love that, it's going to be a long old journey.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think that's, you hit the nail on the head. Absolutely. I mean, what it comes down to, like you said, is just absolutely like loving what you do, you know? And like, cause you're never going to, put in that kind of like diligence or work or whatever, if you don't like absolutely love it, or if you haven't ached and yearned over a specific emotional outlay that you wanted to like accomplish by a certain thing, and you're like, it's not quite there, like, and it just eats you alive, you know what I mean? And I think in terms of how people like refer to like the devil's in the details, and I think like that's true, because I feel like it's like if you're not always kind of like scouring and uncovering the details. Like, you're not going to be aware of the problems that need to be solved. And then, like, the devil will be waiting for you there. There's no doubt about that. You know, he'll derail.
I feel like the devil in the details is specifically towards government documents that they put in, and they always hide things. And I think what you're talking about with gods in the details, I think of, like, what immediately comes to mind is art and music and a few other, you know, like, there's some good movies out there and a couple different things like that, where I'm like, oh yeah, that's the beauty of the world, you know? Yeah. Whereas when you've got some law, some bill getting passed, like Bill C-11, Bill C-63, they got this long thing that you got to try and cipher through, and, you know, and then somewhere in there is a line that says, we're going to screw over podcasters. I'm being tongue in cheek, but you get the point.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. Absolutely. And I think also, too, like, you can apply the phrase, I think, just to life in general. You know, I think it's in the details and, like, you know, how you like conduct yourself in business, you know, in terms of being upstanding and standing by your word and, you know, in terms of how you, like, conduct yourself with your family and your friends, you know, and just, like, and just generally the people around you and how you proceed even with, like, you know, in your job, whatever it may be, you know what I mean? Like, you know, and maybe what you do for money isn't what you want to do for life, you know, but at the same time, like, you can still make the most of any situation and try to, you know, look for ways to improve, you know, be open to the opportunities that present themselves to improve, I would say, you know, because they're always there, but it's just like, you know, it's easy to mope. I mean, when my puppy died, it's like I had to get through the recording process, and it's like it was pretty easy to mope at times, you know, and it's like I've been there for sure, but you know, at the end of the day, like, you have to you know, pick yourself up, dust yourself up, and move on, you know, and life goes on, but, you know, yeah.
it's funny what comes to mind is I was reading a newsletter, and Doug Casey was talking about, you know, troubling times ahead of us and different things like that. And so he brought up one of his favorite cartoons from back in the day was, if anyone remembers, it wasn't DuckTales, but it's the same comics, right? You remember DuckTales with the vault full of, like, gold, and he's always diving and swimming in it. Right. Well, the original cartoon, comic book, is Scrooge McDuck has this vault, and his nephew is Donald, and Donald plays a practical joke on him and leaves a paper for him, and it says that gold is now worth nothing and the world is going to trade money in fish. And and so he's upset for, like, you know, he says he's upset for, like, one page, and then you flip over and he goes to work. Paints a boat and gets a load of fish and takes a load of fish and trades it off on this and comes back and trades that for more fish. And eventually he has so much fish he could go swimming in it, except he realizes fish kind of stink and he doesn't really care for fish. And so he gives the fish all, fills up Donald Duck's house, and the practical joke kind of falls on Donald Duck, right? Because he fills his house full of stinky fish. And yet what Doug Casey's pointing out is it's all about mindset, right? Mm-hmm. You think, you know, he goes from being the richest man in the world one day and not realizing it. I mean, obviously it's a practical joke, to being broke, and all about mindset, get to work. Yeah. And, mindset is a huge thing. When you're talking about, you know, whatever you're trying to chase in life. Right. Yeah. Or just, you know, I got three young kids. Some days, if you go in with the right mindset, man, it's a great day. You go in the wrong mindset, it doesn't matter how lovely they are. Some days you're so frustrated, you can't find your way out of it. You're just so angry. And you're like, usually your spouse has to pick you up that day. You know, usually they're like, you're having a rough day. How about you go sit over there and just have some quiet time? Thank you. I'm going to go sit on the couch and contemplate life, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. I love that story though, because it really kind of highlights, really, I think, just sort of like a theme throughout all of great literature is, like, either on the hero's journey side, kind of like the striving for greatness and overcoming adversity and, like, you know, like grasping for great heights, you know, which is, like, you know, which is the hero's journey. And then on the other side, it's like, there's, like, the compelling narrative of, like, the, the king who falls from grace, you know? And I think, like, you even look at, like Sam Bankman-Fried or whatever, you know? It's like, how do you go from being, like, a multi-billionaire, like, third richest person in the world to, like, jail in the span of a year, you know? It's like, even just, like, aside from the finances of it all, like, that's just such a fall from grace in terms of, like, you know, just your condition in life, you know? And I mean, I think it's fascinating that, you know, the person that we are deep down, we so often, like, identify ourselves by, like, the markers in life, you know what I mean? He was once referred to as a billionaire, you know, and now he's referred to as a felon. He's the same person, you know, underneath it all, you know? You know, I think on a less negative level, that can also, that applies to everybody, you know, like, it's like, I think, a lot of this project was centered around being like an internal struggle, and sort of like conquering the self, I guess, if you will, especially Lord of East Garafraxa. And
what is Garafraxa?
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked. So East
I'm glad you said it like seven times now where I'm finally like, I can say this word, Garafraxa. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So East Garafraxa is where my grandpa farmed the land for.
So that's the land is Garafraxa? That's the area?
Yeah, it's a township called East Garafraxa. It's a township when they were growing up, probably about 500 people or so. Now it's ballooned up to a whopping 2,000 or so. But yeah, it's and I picked it intentionally because I wanted to, like, you know, I think, you know, in hip hop and stuff like that, in music, like these days, like, oh, I'm the king of New York, you know, or whatever it is. But I really thought it was like an interesting concept to be like, I'm the king of my domain, you know, whatever that is, you know, and it's like, and the things that are in my life, I have dominion over. And, and, you know, in terms of like, you know, Lord in the sense of like, you know, authority, ownership or whatever, you know, I'm the Lord of East Garafraxa because it's like, I own everything in my life, you know, and that doesn't mean, you know, and small that it may be, you know what I mean? And it may be off the wall, you know, people like yourself may never have heard of it before, you know, but it's like, when it comes to this particular domain, I'm the king, you know, and
Garafraxa. Really,
yeah, but it is, it's beautiful land out there, but, you know, but not. The point of it isn't in an egotistical sense, though. It's really just in the constant like battle and the struggle to transcend and like gain freedom. Because, like, you know, the old cliche, freedom isn't free, right? It's like you have to pay with your blood, sweat, and tears for that. And I thought the analogy was super cool. Like my grandpa, like out in the fields, like every day, you know, working in, you know, 40 degrees Celsius heat, you know, and just like sweating, you know, having to like keep up with things or else, you know, the farm kind of slips and like, you know, it's like that's your livelihood, you know. But at the end of the day, it's like he was a free man and nobody told him to do for what from, you know, sun up to sundown, you know. And that's kind of the feeling that I tried to convey there.
Yeah, it's super cool. It's a super cool song name. Garafraxa. I, you know, like when I first read it, I'm like, what is that? You know? And is there, you know, a music guy, right? You know, man, sometimes I can be a dork when it comes to music. I'm sure a lot of us can. We did a bike for breakfast was a thing that I was a part of in the middle of COVID, and we biked roughly 1,100 kilometers, a group of us in turns from Lloyd to, if listeners out here, to Quick Dick McDick in Tufnell, Saskatchewan. He's a Saskatchewan comedian, if you don't know who he is. And so I knew I was going to get bike roughly at about 2 a.m, so pitch dark. And I was hoping under the stars with lack of wind. And I, for my hour, I listened to the Interstellar soundtrack, you know, it was just nice. Like, I just, in my head, I sat there and I thought about it for about a month before. I'm like, I'm going to get the bike around here. And I'm like, I'm going to listen to this. Yeah. And I don't know, maybe I'm building up to be more than it is in my own head. And then I went and did it. And I was like, no, it's perfect. I enjoyed, yeah. It didn't feel like torture of biking at 2 a.m. It didn't feel like torture of like, I'm having a bike, you know, however many K. It felt like this is something that I'm never going to forget. And I didn't, don't you know it? I had like this sky of like all the stars were out. There wasn't a stitch of clouds. I think I even had a little bit of a tailwind. It was perfect. And I just biked along and listened to it. And there's, you know, one of the things about Hans Zimmer, if you're a fan, is he knows how to really just build and build and build and hit and then come down and then build again. It's just, it's wonderful. Yeah. Is there something in your world where you're like, oh, this is, because, you know, I'm always curious. There's lots of music out there. Is there something where you're like, oh, no, when I need to get to work, this is what I listen to? Or when I'm, you know, I don't know. What's your choice when you're trying to not just have an upbeat jam session?
Right. Yeah.
Is it Chopin?
Chopin's a big one for sure. I would say Chopin. And I think the beautiful thing about Chopin too, as you alluded to before, I mean, the piano is just such a beautiful instrument, right? And he was really one of the first ones to compose for what we know as the modern piano. Like he came just on the heels of Beethoven. So Chopin was born in 1810. Beethoven died in 1828. So they had like, Chopin was about 18 years old when he died, but he didn't really like know him as a person at all. But Beethoven wrote on kind of what was called the hammer clavier, which is sort of a transition instrument. It was kind of more dull, a little more thuddy, a little bit more of like a plucked sound, you know, whereas like the piano, it's a lot more like lush and rich. And so there's like a history lesson there. But so Chopin would be a big one. But the textures in Chopin are just so beautiful. And then Hans Zimmer would definitely be a big one. Just like love his just the textures, like with Interstellar, it's like you can literally see like the stars kind of like passing you by in this sort of like outer space time warp type thing. It's beautiful. Beethoven would be a big one when I want to get creative. He's just like unbelievable. Just like the rage and the fire that he's able to put in sometimes, just like using like violins and trumpets and flutes and oboes, you know, is incredible. In terms of like modern stuff, like I'm actually a big, like I like a lot of like country stuff. I'm a big fan of like Morgan Wallen. I like the new Noah Kahan record a lot. That stuff's a little more rootsy, but at the same time, I like anything that like transports you from like one place and time to like, it transports you through time. I find that a lot of countries able to do that, because it's like, you know, I haven't lived my entire life as like some like backwoods like country dude, but I've like, you know, I'm intimately acquainted with like rural environments, and just that just those vibes sometimes are like really special, you know, just like a bonfire with some beers is kicking it, you know. That stuff is like really cool to me.
Finish your thought.
I mean, I could go on and on. I love like R&B, Marvin Gaye, you know, Sam Cooke, the Beach Boys are another big one. I just love their like harmonies. Their vocal harmonies are just like unbelievable. That would just be to name a few. I mean, I could go on and on.
I'm getting all philosophical, and I keep chuckling in my head. I'm like, Chopin. I'm going to go funny here. Because one of my, you know, one of my all-time favorite Western movies is Tombstone. And Doc Holliday has a line about Chopin. And I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. I just figure I'm going to pull it up here. I think I'm right in this. Here, we'll see if I'm right, folks.
See if I know this.
Hey. Is that old Dog Trey? That sounds like old Dog Trey to me.
Bottom?
You know, Stephen Foster. Oh, Susanna. Camptown Races. Stephen Stinkin' Foster.
Oh, yes, well, this happens to be a nocturne.
Which?
You know, Frederick fucking Chopin.
I love it.
I'm like, forgive me, everyone's coming into my mind today. I'm like, Chopin. Why do I keep coming up with some movie quote? You know, if I could make, you know, if I was going to make millions of dollars, it would come off of ridiculous knowledge of movies where it has no functionality in society. It's Val Kilmer playing Doc Holliday drunk in a movie scene where he's playing Chopin. That's where I know Chopin from.
Such a good scene, though. And that Nocturne is beautiful. I would, to anybody listening, I would highly recommend you can start with the Nocturnes. You can pretty much trust any Nocturne to be beautiful. And the whole collection is just like absolutely sensational. And yeah, you'll be listening to some of the best music ever created in Western culture. So, I mean,
where can people find your music? And if there's people down in the States or anything like that, where can they find you, Daniel?
Yeah, absolutely. So right now we premiered the project on YouTube. I gave final approval. It'll be going up on Spotify within a day or two. So it should be up there as well. So if you search Daniel Roy, Skies We Knew Back Home is the name of the project. So Skies We Knew Back Home, Daniel Roy, that'll come up with my content, and you can kind of listen through the project. And I designed it as, I call it a sonata. It's not technically a sonata, but sonata is like a technical format in like classical music or whatever. And I just really tried to take that as a framework to, you know, craft like a sonic experience where it's like it's not just like a song where you're just, you know, you're playing the verse, you're playing guitar, you know what I mean? I try to make it, you know, kind of move and transitions. And the whole concept is to take you on a 15-minute musical journey. So if you have 15 minutes to carve out and you want to kind of go for a musical ride, I'm pretty proud of it. So yeah, I'd be grateful if people checked it out.
Well, what we'll do is I'll put your YouTube channel. Me and YouTube don't get along that well. I just got bucked off of it again for Peter McCullough, who was just on. I'll put the YouTube channel in the show notes. That way, if people want to check out your music, they can just click on it and away they go. Thanks for hopping on today. And what we're gonna do, folks, is we're going to flip over to Substack. If you haven't come with us to Substack, I don't know what you're doing. Actually, I do. You're probably enjoying just the podcast. But if you want to come over to Substack, we're gonna ask a couple more questions of Daniel before we let him out of here. We're having a little too much fun when we're talking classical music and some of the little things. If you want to hop over to Substack, hop over with us. We got a couple more things going to do there. And either way, we'll catch up to you guys next week. As this is Thursday, holy crap. And the mashup coming on Friday morning, 10 a.m. For all you fine folks, if you're paying attention, 10 a.m. We switched this week. So moving forward, the Tuesday mashup becomes the mashup. Fridays at 10 a.m. So that's what you can expect on Friday, or hop over to Substack with us. We're going to take a brief little break.
Psalm 61. Hear my cry, O God. Listen to my prayer. From the ends of the earth I call to you. I call as my heart grows faint. Lead me to the rock that is higher than I. For you have been my refuge, a strong tower against the foe.
I've pushed this plow till my fingers start to bleed. One day I'll show the world.